Hey, what's up, my friends? Welcome back to the Pilgrimage Podcast for the curious, creative, and contemplative souls. This is a podcast where we talk about what it is to wake up to that which has always been true. We have conversations about the spiritual path and creative expression, and it's my honor that you've joined me again today. I haven't done a podcast for a few weeks because since I last sat in front of this microphone, my life has changed. My wife gave birth to our beautiful daughter, Eden Ray Esther Smith, on the 9th of June. And our whole life has been turned upside down in every single possible way. It's beautiful. It's tiring. It's everything we've ever wanted to do and be in becoming parents. It's such a fulfilling experience. And so I'm so grateful for all your well wishes and prayers. And congratulations. It's very, very lovely. And it's good to be back. It's good to be sat in front of the microphone again. And I'm excited to share some thoughts with you all, because during this time, since Eden has come along, life has slowed down and it's become a lot more simple. And I'm so grateful for that, because it just creates space and margin for me in a way that often I find it very difficult to do. I find it difficult often to slow down. And simplify, but that's something I've been really trying to do recently. And Eden kind of gives me no other option, because, you know, I'll just be holding her for like hours, you know, and I'm not doing anything else. I'm just sat on the chair holding her, looking at this little bundle of beauty and wonder and joy, and just thinking and praying. And there's a few thoughts that have come to me over this time, one in particular that I really want to share with you guys, and I hope it's an encouragement. I hope it helps. It's just some thoughts around kind of where we are really as a culture and as a society in this moment, in this very strange and perplexing moment. And I just hope to share a few spiritual truths that I hope will kind of bring a level of clarity and peace to so much of the chaos and confusion that's going on around us. So there's an ancient story found in the Hebrew scriptures about a man called Jacob. And it's this fascinating story. I've been thinking about it a lot. It's the kind of story that you grew up hearing in Sunday school if you went to church when you were a kid. And if not, you know, you might even know the story just because it's kind of a culturally known, you know, parable. And so I'm going to share the story with you and some reflections on it. So I'm going to read from the book of Genesis, which is the first book in the Hebrew scriptures. And if you've never opened up a Bible before, if you've never read the scriptures, don't be put off by this. You know, the Bible is this beautiful collection of stories and poetry and history and letters written, all, you know, recording human relationship with the divine. And it's such a powerful place to go to find clarity and find peace and meaning and understanding what it really means to be human and what God, the divine, is really like, and how we interact with God, in whom we live and move and have our being. So this is the book of Genesis, and it's chapter 28, verse 10. So I'm just going to read it and share some thoughts with you guys. So it starts with this: Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran, and he came to a certain place and he stayed there the night. So this is the guy Jacob, and he's going from this town, but Beersheba, towards another town, Haran. And the story kind of begins here with him in between the two places. So he came to a certain place and he stayed the night because the sun had set and he was tired. And it says, taking one of the stones of that place, he put it under his head and he lay down to sleep, and he dreamed. And behold, there was a ladder set upon the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families be of the earth, and they will be blessed. Behold, I'm with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Then Jacob woke up from his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid, and he said, how awesome is this place? There is none. This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And so early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and he set up as a pillar and he poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. And the name of the city was Luz at first. So he renamed it. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will go with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. So let me give you like Genesis in like a couple of minutes, right? Just some context to this. Because Jacob is a really important person in the whole story of the scriptures and in the whole kind of story of humanity, really, because his grandfather, Abraham, you might have heard of, you know, Father Abraham had many sons. Abraham was this man who left the context of his father's tribe and belief system and went in search of, the way the scripture says it, is went in search of a city whose builder and architect was God, right? And Abraham and God have this incredibly intimate, beautiful relationship where God makes a covenant with Abraham and he says, through you, I'm going to birth a nation. The difficulty for Abraham is that he's married to a woman who is barren and they can't have children. So it seems impossible. But Abraham believes God. And the story's crazy and so much happens. But along the way, Abraham has a son called Isaac, right? And then Isaac has two sons called Jacob and Esau. And something that was so prominent of that time and in that culture, and something that I want to bring back in my own household, is the authority of a blessing from the father to his children. And the blessing was more sacred and more important than, you know, any kind of monetary, financial, material inheritance. The blessing of a father to a son was so deep and defining. And Jacob was the youngest son and he wanted his father's blessing as the firstborn. So his older brother, who deserved the blessing, Esau, was one day out hunting. He's this kind of like macho, hairy man, and he's out hunting and Jacob is at home cooking, right? And Esau comes back and Esau's super hungry. And so he's like, hey, Jacob, give me some of that soup that you're making. And Jacob, because Jacob's cunning, right? The name Jacob actually means like trickster, fraudster, deceiver. Jacob uses Esau's hunger against him and says, yeah, I'll make you some soup. I'll give you some of this stew if you give me your birthright. If you give me what is yours, you know, innately as the firstborn. And Esau, because he's just crazy hungry, he's like, all right, cool, I'll give you it. So he gives him it. And then Jacob deceives his father Isaac. It's such a crazy story, by dressing up as Esau. So he makes himself like hairier by putting like animal cloth on him. So when Isaac, who's now old and blind, touches him, he realizes, oh, this is my son Esau, because he's hairy. And so he blesses Jacob with this birthright. And Esau finds out and the hunger's fulfilled now and he's just angry. So he wants to kill Jacob. So he's like coming after Jacob. And not only is Esau after Jacob, but the divine God is after Jacob, because this blessing was a God-given right. It was a God-given birthright. And Jacob deceived his father. So Jacob is kind of this troubled, you know, fraudster who's destined to kind of be a nomad because he's no longer really welcome in his family home or town. So he leaves. And that's where this story begins. Jacob leaving one place, going to another place. And in the middle of these two places, Jacob gets tired and he falls asleep. And when he falls asleep, he has this dream and, you know, this powerful, like beautiful, poetic dream of a ladder from earth up until heaven. And there's angels coming up and down the ladder. And Jacob wakes up and he says this really profound statement. He goes, surely the Lord is in this place and I didn't know it. Surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. Surely God was in this space in between two places, and I wasn't aware of it. And I've been thinking about where we are, like even specifically with the virus and with lockdown. And in this, we're not at the beginning of it, but we're certainly not at the end of it. We're kind of in the middle of it all. And it's so easy for us to begin building an expectation of what is to come and kind of what the future will be like, and hopefully all the good things that are coming our way, and miss out on the presence of the divine and the present realities of goodness, the opportunities for wonder, right? The spaces for gratitude in our life that are here and now. And it's so easy to begin to live like the future is going to make us someone different than we are right now, as if something could happen to kind of birth within us this awakening or enlightenment, and then we'll become who we've always wanted to be, right? But it's in this in-between place, which is really where we're most vulnerable, where we're most kind of like exposed in our fragility and lack, if I can put it like that, in our lack. Like, we don't have everything that we want to have. We don't have the opportunities that we would like to have. We don't have the liberties that we would like to have. We don't have the certainty. Like, we don't know how this ends, you know? We don't know where we go from here. And we see that clearly within government. No one knows, man. Like, the government guidelines are changing every single day. No one knows what happens next. And it's super vulnerable. And this place in between the two places that Jacob finds himself in, there's an emptiness to it, right? It's not here and it's not there. It's this emptiness, but it's filled with presence and mystery. And there's something about Jacob goes to sleep because he's tired and he's weary and it's nighttime. That's why he stops there. If it wasn't night and he wasn't tired, he would have kept going. But he was tired and it was night, and so he stopped. And when you're tired, I don't know if this is just me, but your mind becomes more lucid and you become so much more open and aware of things that when you're full, your conscious is like fully present, you aren't, right? And there's something about the nighttime when the darkness like just is like this cloth over everything. You know, I was standing outside my house the other day, I was thinking, and it was dark, and I was thinking, man, this is the same location, but it feels so different. Like, that tree is going to be there tomorrow. And, you know, like, that bench is going to be there in the morning. Like, they're not going anywhere. But this whole area feels different. Like, it's just, the sun is gone. The illumination has gone. The ability to see has gone. And we become slightly more vulnerable. And really, when it's nighttime, all you can do is stop and lie down. You can't keep walking. It's too dangerous, you know? You don't know where you're going. So you stop and you lie down like Jacob did. And to stop and to lie down is an act of surrender. And I just feel like we're in this space where we have to surrender. And surrender, when you hear that word surrender, you might think in your mind, like, surrender is quitting. But surrender isn't giving up. Surrender is choosing just simply to stop. And in Jacob's case, he's choosing to stop running. Like, he's physically choosing to stop. And if you look at his life is just filled with deception. And it continues in that way in many respects. And there's so much that happens in his life that I'm going to get onto in a second. But this is the first point in Jacob's life where I look at it and he's stopped. He just stopped. The darkness caused him to stop. His tiredness caused him to stop. And it feels like it's the same with us right now. Like, there is an opportunity to stop. It's as if the darkness teaches us that we are no longer in control. Like, we're not in control of what we do next. We have to stop and sleep. Jacob was not in control of his own destiny like he thought he was. I'll rob my brother. I'll fool my father. But now in his surrender to the darkness and his surrender to the tiredness, there's an opportunity for God to appear and to speak. And it's as if Jacob is able to hear and see with new eyes and with new ears. And there's something in this in-between space, this empty place, this spot between two towns, right? There's something about the vulnerability of it, the simplicity of it, in which Jacob is able to receive what has always been true and always been available, but only now in his surrendering is he able to actually access it. So Kara, my wife and I, before Eden came, we were like, told you need to find a box set to binge watch, right? Because you will be up at all hours of the night. You will be so tired during the day. You need something chill that you can just put on a watch and laugh and just like mindless, like, you know, no intense films, no Christopher Nolan, because you just need to like not have to understand everything that's going on. And so we are big fans of The Office. You know, I'm a big fan of the UK Office, but I'm a really big fan of the American Office, Steve Carell. So we've been like watching it from series one all the way through. In fact, the first thing I did when I got a record deal like a few years ago with my advance was I bought the whole series of The Office, like 1 to 9. The problem was within like a month, it was all available on like Amazon Prime and Netflix. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We've just been watching it all. And there is this episode, I think it's like series two, where, and if you haven't watched The Office, that's okay, but there's this episode where the whole office go out for what they call the Dundies, and the Dundies is like the office award ceremony, and the awards are ridiculous, right? I'll give you an example. Pam, the office receptionist, wins the award for the whitest sneakers, right? And she gets up to receive her award. And they're in Chili's, right? And if you're in America, you know Chili's well. If you're in England or somewhere else, just think of how do I describe Chili's? If you're in England, think of Wetherspoons. Like, it's a sort of kind of cheap. You could call it a little tacky. It's got a vibe, but it's not, the vibe isn't because it's got an amazing aesthetic and an incredible menu. It's just got a vibe because it's Chili's, you know, the beer is cheap, the food is cheap, like you can, you know, eat in there and get out, like it's Wetherspoons in the UK, and that's where they're having this office ceremony, and she gets up to receive her award for the whitest sneakers in the office, and she does this like Oscars acceptance speech, and she's like, I just want to thank God, and she says, just like off the cuff, she goes, I want to thank God because I, you know, it's because of him. And then she pauses, and then she goes, I feel God in this Chili's tonight. And we were watching this, like, I think Eden had been born at this point. And we're watching it, and the episode continued, but my heart just like lingered in that phrase, I feel God in this Chili's tonight. And there was something about it that felt sacred, felt holy, felt like the word of God, felt like a divine like statement. And I just had to pause. And for the days that continued, I kept saying this phrase, I feel God in this Chili's tonight. And, you know, Kara asked me about it, and we had this whole conversation. And I was like, man, I feel like that's a phrase for us right now. Because you don't know what it's like to wake up countless times in the night for your baby until you do it. People told me about it, but, you know, it's a baptism of fire, you know. And if it's like 1:30 in the morning and you're changing your baby's nappy and it's just like caked in poo and it's getting all over your hands, and then you're about to put the new nappy on, and just as you're about to seal it, she does another wee. I know I'm getting real graphic on the Pilgrimage podcast, but I'm just being real. This is my life now. And the wee goes everywhere, and it goes all over the changing mat, and you put the newborn onesie on the changing mat. Now that's soaked with wee, and you're so tired. And then she starts crying because you're fumbling around, and you know the next day is just going to be full of the same thing. And plus you're going back to work and you got a huge to-do list to get through. Plus it's COVID. Plus people are in pain, plus money isn't easy, plus, you know, just fill in the blank. And all that's going on, and you all have your own moment like that. But honestly, we've been doing this. In the middle of the night, in those moments, we'll just look at each other and we'll say, I feel God in this Chili's tonight. I feel God in this Chili's tonight. Not because we do, right? Not because it's true that in that moment, I suddenly feel this like supernatural, you know, transcendent like sense of awe and wonder and enlightenment. But because actually, if I can acknowledge that the divine, that the holy exists in all of those moments, in every single moment, I'm going to wake up to a truth that is truer than my circumstance, right? That is realer than the current moment. And so when Jacob wakes up and he says, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it, right? And then he says, how awesome is this place? How awesome in his place? What place? What place? At the beginning, it says he left Beersheba and went to Haran. And then he came to a certain place between the two. There's not much about this place. Like, it's nowhere special. Or is it? Right? It's nowhere special until it becomes sacred. Only in his awakening and his enlightenment and in his acknowledgement of a truth deeper than what is on the surface, you know, deeper than what everyone else is seeing. How awesome is this place? And I love what he does next, man. He takes his pillow, which is a stone. He takes his pillow and he turns it into a pillar. Oh, he takes the stone and he turns it into a pillar. He anoints it with oil and he says, this shall be God's house. What, that stone that you slept on? Yeah. He's like, I didn't realize that I was sleeping on holy ground the whole time. I didn't realize that my head was rested upon the house of God. I'm just like flailing my arms everywhere. I just knocked a book off the stand. That's how excited I'm getting right now. I didn't realize that where I was so awesome. Like, we say awesome all the time now. I use that phrase all the time. Oh, bro, that burger was awesome. Right? That's a word that should be reserved for Mount Everest. Like, that's a word that should be reserved for that which is really awesome. And Jacob is using it in that context. He's not like, oh, this coffee shop is awesome, right? No. He is literally saying, I have stumbled upon the house of God. Like, I've stumbled across the place where God lives. That is awesome. And he's naming something with an appropriate definition, right? He's naming something with a definition which is appropriate if you see it for what it truly is. Now, this isn't flippant, and it's not just like, it's not hype. He's been enlightened. He's been awoken. He's seen the ladder. He's seen the ladder that is rested upon the ground and goes all the way up to heaven, and angels are coming down and going up. What does that mean? God is saying, this is what's happening all the time, every minute of every single day. Heaven and earth are connected. Everything is deeply spiritual, Jacob. Everything has meaning. Everything is drenched with something that is beyond what you see initially when you approach it. And when he woke up, he said, I didn't realize that the whole time God was here. I didn't realize I would have made so many different decisions if I'd approached my life realizing that it was holy ground, and that was me hitting another thing, that it was holy ground and that heaven was innately connected to this moment, right? And Jacob's story is just mad, because a couple chapters later, oh, this is just so crazy. A couple chapters later, there's a story of Jacob where it doesn't even give that much context, right? But the story goes that Jacob, again, is walking, he's making his travels. And then one night, this man rocks up. I'm just going to hold up. Give me a second, my friends. I'm just going to pull this open in the scriptures. Give me one second. Let me all hear this Bible opening up. 1 minute. Give me a second. Just a little interlude. Because I want to read it with the, I don't want to paraphrase it. Because the actual wording is really interesting. All right, here we go. Okay, then in the night he arose, again we're in the nighttime, and he took his wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok, and took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And then Jacob was left alone, right? This is what it says. Jacob was left alone, and then a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Now, when that man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as they wrestled. And then he said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but be called Israel, before, because you have striven, you have wrestled with God and with men and have prevailed." And then Jacob said, "Tell me your name." And he says, "Why is it you ask for my name?" And he blessed him. So, okay, a couple of things here, man, because this is just exceptional. It's just exceptional storytelling. So Jacob is alone and in the night once again, and a man comes and wrestles him all night. All right, I've got a brother-in-law called Ed. If he's listening to this podcast, he's gonna love this, because I've just got to like brag on him for a second. Ed's a big dude. He's a big guy. He is my little sister's husband. And I met him when I was probably like, I don't know, 17, and he was 14, and he was already like three times my size. He's a big dude, big rugby player, mountain of a man. But the thing with Ed is, you know, I gotta wrestle him. You know what I mean? Because I'm his sister's big brother. So I gotta wrestle him. Doesn't mean I beat him, but every time that we get together, we wrestle. And I'm not talking about, you know, just gentle, you know, just kind of frolicking about. I'm talking about it hurts. And at the end of our wrestles, we are exhausted. And then when it kicks off, the family just kind of roll their eyes and like leave us to it. But it's intense. If we wrestle for like 10 minutes, it's super exhausting. And Jacob starts wrestling with this man, this like strange man. And he wrestles with him all night. So this dude just rocks up and Jacob starts wrestling with him. But something so significant happens, right? Jacob is winning. And it's like daybreak. The night is ending. And I said everything I wanted to say about the night, right? The night creates this context of surrender. And Jacob won't let him go. And the man's like, "Let me go." And Jacob's like, "No." Check this out. Lean in. Wherever you are, just lean in. Jacob says, "No, I won't let you go until you bless me." Hold up. You want to be blessed again? Jacob, who stole a blessing from his brother and fooled his father into blessing him, and then woke up from a dream where God blessed him. What does a blessing mean to Jacob? A blessing to Jacob is a reconnection and a reordering of his soul to its truest self and its purest stance. He's saying, I don't want a blessing that I've fooled someone for. I want a blessing that I fought for. And when Jacob asks for the blessing, he's putting an authority upon this person that he's wrestling with, that is divine. The last time Jacob was blessed was by God in a dream. And now he's asking this man who's wrestling him through the night to bless him. Jacob knows that this man with whom he's wrestling isn't just a man. So the man actually says, "You've wrestled tonight, Jacob. You have wrestled with God. You have wrestled with God." And then God renames Jacob. Check this out. He renames Jacob from deceiver, fraudster, trickster to one who wrestles with God. This is so rich. It's as if the dream that Jacob had in that weary night of the soul, where he woke up to the reality that heaven isn't somewhere else, it's here and now, that God isn't going to show up at some point. We need to wake up to his current presence. It's as if all of that has gone so deeply in his soul that he couldn't be distracted into thinking that this is just a man, that this is just a fleshly struggle. No, he's recognizing that this is an interaction with the divine. And despite its difficulty, despite that it's a fight, there is a blessing within it. There is a redemption within it. There is a renaming within it that he will not let go of, right? And so he gets blessed and he gets renamed. So often we think that who we're gonna be is validated by something that is going to happen, like in the future, like when everything is set in place, when everything is good. Like, I grew up in a church tradition that always talked about this word revival. Like, there is a revival coming. There is this move of God that is coming. There is something in the future that's gonna happen, which is gonna be so amazing. And what I've realized more and more, like as I've got older, is there isn't a revival. There isn't something coming that's gonna make you someone else. You know, it's like when people say, you know, when they're struggling relationally, like, I just need to get married. Like, bro, like, marriage isn't gonna fix you, and marriage isn't gonna make you someone you're not. Like, the goal going into marriage, going into relationship, is like, do the work now, like, evolve now, heal now, become the person now, so you can give yourself fully to someone else in the future. I just believe that God, the divine, isn't looking for people to be like these exceptional showmen, like preachers and leaders. He wants people who turn stones into pillows and pillows into pillars, right? He wants people who can go through life and wrestle with the very, like, their identity, the core of who they are, their souls, wrestle and recognize that the blessing isn't something that comes, you know, that takes all your imperfection away and takes all of your struggle away. That isn't what a blessing is. But people that recognize, oh man, it's in my struggle that I'm blessed. Like, it's in my wrestle. It's in my imperfection that I'm becoming who I was always born to be. There isn't this, like, plastic, sterile, like, perfected version of me. It doesn't exist. It's here and now. There's this Johnny Swim line that says, while you pray for revival, I'm already living in one. You know, like, revival is to be revived, and to be revived is to be awake and fully aware of all that truly is, to go to these desolate in-between spaces and say, how awesome is this place? Like, imagine if you did that in all the areas of your life that currently feel dry and desolate. How awesome is this? Not because you're like some, you know, like, you're like plastic, fake smile, pretending everything's good. No, but because you're like, you've seen deeper, you've gone deeper below the surface. And where others are cynical and others are skeptical and others are dismissive, where others see a pile of stones, you see a pillar worth anointing and calling the house of God. And you see every table is an altar. Nothing is too small. Nothing is too insignificant. Brother Lawrence, an incredible monk who gave his life to peeling potatoes in the kitchen, wrote a book called The Practice of the Presence of God. And he said this: we ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God, who regards not the greatness of our work, but the love with which it is performed. So don't grow weary about doing little things, right? Don't grow weary of, like, acknowledging the parts of your life that aren't spectacular. Nah, the music is being able to put the purpose and the love and the intentionality and the wonder and the gratitude into everything. The love of the people around you, the love of the work that you get to do. I'm gonna do an episode about work soon. Just the fact that we get to work, you know? Thomas Merton said, a man knows when he has found his vocation, when he stops thinking about how to live and just begins to live, right? When he stops thinking about what would make this better and like how I could live in such a way where X, Y, and Z would happen, and just starts to live, man, and just starts to embrace the moment. The encouragement of this is the ladder is over us all. The ladder is over us all. In every single moment of your life, I don't care if you've never read the Bible or not, in every single second of your life, there is a ladder leant against up the wall of your back, and upon it, angels are ascending and descending constantly. That's the reality here and now, in the in-between moments, between two places. Through Jacob, God reveals that the ladder of his love and his life and his connection to us is deep, and it's within. A place so deep and so within that it is seen in the gift of a dream. Like, it's so deep and it's so beyond like our analytical consciousness. It could only be revealed in a dream. My prayer for us, for you listening to this pilgrimage podcast, is that you would let yourself stop and surrender, that you would cease your movement so that you could give yourself over to a dream. A deeper, realer truth, a realer truth than what we go throughout our day acknowledging. And be so awake and so alive that you can't help but say, how awesome is this place? God was here the whole time. I just didn't know it. We call it Jacob's ladder, but it's not possessed by Jacob. It's God's ladder, and it's leant against all of us. Oh man, come on. First pilgrimage podcast as a dad. Feeling a little excited, feeling a little rusty, getting back in the game. I hope this has encouraged you. I hope that you know that in the chaos, in the calamity, in the craziness of this moment, there are still the opportunities. There are still the moments where we can be awoken to what has always been true, that we're loved, that we belong, that we're seen by the divine, that heaven and earth are deeply entwined and connected, that the story isn't over, that things will get better. It's gonna take so much time, but that's what progress is. Progress takes time, and we have to undo, we have to unlearn, but we gotta keep going and keep moving forward. And this moment isn't wasted, and your life isn't wasted. And if you feel tired, and if you feel like it's dark around you, it's time to dream. It's time to fall asleep. It's time to dream. It's time to take some space each day and meditate and pray and read and listen to music and be still and have deep conversations with friends and enjoy this life. Not the surface stuff, but the deep stuff. The stuff that really, like, this is what it's all about. Bless you, my friend. I speak a blessing over you as you're listening to this. A blessing like Jacob received. This is what God said to Jacob when he was in that dream. He says, behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go. Receive that. The divine is with you and will keep you wherever you go.